I just think the way I've read it, I think it, I mean, based upon that, what was it, 2 years ago?
Let's go ahead and call this meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors to order. The date is Thursday, September 2nd, 2010. We're here in the CR room at the Community Center. Alan, would you please call the roll to determine quorum?
Supervisor Williamson.
Here.
Supervisor Livermore.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Aldean.
Here.
Mayor Kroll is out of...
Mayor Kroll is on a diplomatic mission to China. He was invited, one of the few mayors in the United States, invited to attend the World Emerging Industry Summit. So we wish him well, and we hope he'll open a lot, you know, many more markets for Carson City, and we hope that he has a safe trip home. And Molly, Supervisor Walt, is running late, so hopefully she'll join us while we're in progress. All right, thank you, Alan. Let's see, invocation. Father Chuck just joined us. Would you care to provide us with an invocation? Perfect timing.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I guess I'm not the only one late. I'm about to apologize for that. Each day when we, or each time when we gather in prayer, we kind of pause and reflect, and we lift our prayer up and often asking. And I thought I'd do this little few lines of reflection here, maybe of what God says to us in the morning when we gather. So this is a reflection by Sarah Young. Let the dew of my presence refresh your mind and heart. So many, many things vie for your attention in this complex world of instant communication. The world has changed enormously since I first gave the command to be still and know that I am God. However, this timeless truth is essential for the well-being of your soul. As dew refreshes grass and flowers during the stillness of the night, so my presence revitalizes you as you stand quietly with me. And so, Holy God, we give you thanks for this beautiful day, for the gift of living in this beautiful place. We ask you to send forth that spirit of wisdom to guide this board as it continues to guide our city and our county. Guide and direct the conversation, the thoughts, and the words that come here this day. And we make this prayer as your holy and humble people. Amen. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, Supervisor Walt has arrived in the nick of time. Molly, do you want us to wait until you set up your computer? Okay. All right, we'll go ahead and proceed. The next item on the agenda is action to approve the minutes from May 18th, 2010 and August 5th of 2010. Does any member of the board have any suggested changes to the minutes as presented? I had a couple of minor clerical changes that I don't necessarily think we have to enter into the record. I've given those to Kathy, and she will incorporate them into the minutes. With that, would someone care to make a motion to approve? Thank you.
I move to approve the minutes of May 18th, 2010, and the minutes of August 5th, 2010.
Any comments on the question? Any comments from the audience? Seeing none, all those in favor, bless you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We've got to multitask here. Okay. Next item on the agenda, adoption of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda, Andy? Okay. Not anymore? none that you're aware of. All right. Well, given that, we'll adopt the agenda as published. Move on to public comments and discussion. Are there any comments from members of the public on any item that is not agendized for discussion at this meeting? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public comment and move on to item 8, the consent agenda. Does any member of the board or any member of the public wish to have any item from the consent agenda removed and heard separately? Supervisor Livermore.
Madam Mayor Pro Tem, I move to approve the consent agenda that consists of three items. There are 8-1 from the treasurer, item 8-2A and B, which is the Airport Authority, as published and presented.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved.
I would like to make one comment.
Yes,
and just one of the things that we just approved on the consent agenda was a Federal Aviation Administration grant to continue to do improvements to the airport, and the amount is $1,783,514. So I congratulate the Airport Authority and it's Casey, is it? Casey for being so aggressive in seeking funds to continue to improve that airport. Thanks very
much. Thank you. Thank you, Casey, for being here this morning. All right. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to, that's the end of the consent agenda. Let's move on to item 10, finance. Nick.
Good morning, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the board. For the record, Nick Provenanti, finance director. This item, we were perusing NRS 251030, and it requires the finance director to report to the county commissioners at each regular meeting thereof the condition of each fund in the treasury. So while that's kind of a vague statement, we didn't really feel that we were doing a very good job of reporting this to you folks. So I kind of did a little history and just kind of checked around some of the other entities, and you know, some of the other counties do report it, and some of them don't. It's kind of a hodgepodge, but Larry felt strongly that we should, since the statute says that we should do this, that we should be doing this.
So, logical.
State law.
Right, yeah. So,
it's a novel idea.
So basically what I did is I prepared a statement of cash receipts and disbursements for you folks. And what I'm going to be doing, I think, in the future is running this report as of the day we signed the agendas. So, I mean, we kind of have to pick a time. So basically, there's going to be timing differences in this report. As you can see, there's basically $41 million total in cash. There is some negatives in some of the funds, and a lot of the times there's timing differences. For example, in the street maintenance fund, we receive gas tax and sales tax money in that fund, and we don't get that money until the very end of the month. So the sales tax we typically get on the 30th or 31st of the month. The gas tax we get a few days before that. So this report was run on the 24th, so that money wasn't in the system at that time. We've since gotten about almost $280,000. So there's going to be timing differences that are going to affect these funds. The ambulance fund, for example, we haven't really done the general fund transfer of $220,000. So there's always going to be timing differences. So I don't think we don't really need to get alarmed if there's, you know, I mean, if obviously if the general fund is negative, that might be
cause for concern.
Right, but other than that, there's always going to be timing differences. So, and if there's any big issues, again, I'm planning on just doing this on the consent agenda so you can have the report. And I believe if there's any, you know, huge negative numbers in some of these funds, I can explain it either in the report or, you know, at the meeting. just at your pleasure. So that's really basically all that I have. It's just a report that you're going to start seeing at every meeting. And if you have any questions.
Thank you, Nick. Well, I think we're accustomed to seeing negative balance in the balances in the ambulance fund. And, of course, that's primarily based, isn't it, Nick, on uncollectible debt?
Right. That's part of it. I mean, hopefully we'd still like it to pay for itself cash flow-wise. And, you know, there's certain times of the year where it gets more money, and we still need a general fund transfer, you know, in order for it to kind of get over the hump. The parking fund is kind of that way as well. I mean, it's kind of on the verge of always, you know, breaking even. So, I mean, we're pretty aware of these funds at the end of the year. As you recall, the grant fund was going negative in June 30th, and we actually had to do a loan mm-hmm. from the general fund and from the quality of life fund. So we don't want any of the funds to be negative at the end of the year. But during the year, there's always going to be a little timing difference.
Okay. So. Thank you, Nick. Supervisor Williamson.
I was just going to say, and I'm sure as we see these monthly, we'll get kind of a feeling of what, as the funds are coming in and out.
Right.
And also our residents will get an idea of exactly cash flow and where we are. So I think it's really, really, thanks for reading NRS and updating. And I'm prepared to make a motion on this.
Supervisor Livermore has come in.
Nick, a couple of questions on this. What is 752 range improvements? What range is that? Is that the rifle range or?
No, that's probably the 700 funds are all trust and agency funds where we get money in and we just kind of hold them and then we transfer them out.
Is that PETA money or something like that?
It's probably for some sort of land range improvements that we get. I can double check for you and I'll let you know.
Okay.
Because I'm not exactly sure what that fund is.
And final question is, where would it appear in here to be the Eagle Valley Golf Course?
The golf course is not in here.
Okay, where would you find the funding attached to that then?
Well,
where would that be in here?
The golf course is actually a not-for-profit that runs it.
But we get an annual payment from that.
Right, that annual payment goes into the debt service fund, so that's Fund 410.
Okay.
So we're showing that as a rental payment into the debt service fund because that's where the debt service gets paid is out of the debt service fund.
Okay. So individuals in the community may be watching to make sure that fund is transferred. So how would they know that the debt service fund would whether that was a fact or not?
Well, they probably wouldn't know just by looking at this report. They would probably have to ask me if it was done.
All right.
Would be really the only way.
Okay. Thank you, Nick.
Nick, one recommendation, since you'll be providing these to us on a regular basis, you may, if there's an anomaly, you may want to footnote that
right.
easy for me to say, anomaly, just so that, you know, I think you can anticipate that there are going to be some questions, and maybe
right.
that's a good way to address those questions in advance of having the report published.
Absolutely.
Okay?
I will do that.
All right. Terrific. Thank you. Supervisor Williamson, would you care to make a motion?
Yes. Thank you. I move to accept the report on the condition of each fund in the Treasury through August 24th, 2010, per NRS 251.030.
Second.
All right. And I'll take public comments on the question. Does any member of the public wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. Moving on to item 11, Parks and Rec. We have a presentation regarding the outcome of the needs assessment survey. Roger?
Okay, good. Good morning, Mayor Pro Tem and Board. Parks and Recreation staff is very pleased today to bring, hopefully for your acceptance, the 2010 Carson City Indoor Recreation Needs Survey. And I'm going to kind of kick this off with giving some background about how this survey came about. And then I'll turn it over to Joel, and Joel will kind of go through the meat and potatoes of the survey. And then we'll end with some concluding remarks. But during this whole process and during this presentation, please feel free, if there's a question, you know, or there's some information up on the screen that brings up a question in your mind, you know, feel free to interrupt us and ask any questions or offer any comments that you think are appropriate. Just a little background for the beginning. Back in January 21st of this year at the Board of Supervisors meeting, the board directed staff to develop and conduct an indoor recreation needs assessment survey. The purpose was to assess the current and future indoor recreation needs of the community. The survey is conducted by the Park and Recreation staff, utilizing, and Joel will go into this a little bit more detail, an online survey program called the Survey Monkey. And he also used guidelines, utilized guidelines from the National Recreation Park Association. And Joel, I think, did an outstanding job developing the survey. He did receive some, you know, comments and input from Vern Cron, our park planner, myself, and the Park and Recreation Commission as well. The results were presented to the Park and Recreation Commission during their meeting on July 13th of 2010. And I guess with that, I'll turn it over to Joel, but as I mentioned before, please feel free to ask any questions or offer any comments during that portion of the presentation.
Thank you. For the record, Joel Dunn, Carson City Recreation. As Roger mentioned, we used the Survey Monkey, which is an online survey opportunity that we used. That it allowed us to address some of our concerns in doing a community-wide needs assessment survey. We were able to identify and limit it to a single IP address, which would limit to hopefully one user per survey coming in. Knowing that we wouldn't be able to reach all of the demographics of Carson City, we also offered a paper survey, both in Spanish and in English, just like the online survey, and had a couple of opportunities set up in the community center, public meetings, for participants to come in or potential participants to come into the community center to fill out the survey. To get the word out about not only the online survey but those community meetings, we did mailers to all participants that have been within the Carson City Recreation programs over the last 5 years. We did PSAs, reached out to all the PGs, which is obviously the flyer that the school district uses to reach the parents for information. Along with that, we also used some of our community partners. We used a lot of the youth sports programs at Governors, Edmonds, the adult softball complex at Centennial, the soccer programs. I'd like to thank the Senior Center, Carson City Senior Center, also did surveys for us, the Boys and Girls Club. So as you can see, we made every effort to make sure that we were able to reach out to any facet of the community to not lose a demographic of programs and or the age that we need to serve. Continuing on, I'd like to touch on the NRPA. The NRPA did play an important role for us. I wanted to make sure that we were consistent in the questions that we were asking to Carson City residents and also the programs that we're potentially going to offer the community. Bill Beckner with the NRPA is in charge of research and development. I ran the survey consistently through Bill, and Bill provided a lot of input on what they would typically use in a needs assessment survey, they being the NRPA, and also questions that they used in their national operation standards for recreation programming. So we definitely have a lot of background and a lot of input, very consistent with hundreds of needs assessments that have been handled throughout the United States. I'd like to just then touch into the survey. And once again, as Roger mentioned, any time that you have any questions throughout the survey, I'll try to make it quick. I think Supervisor Aldean and I probably share in our excitement for data, and I could probably sit here all day and go over the numbers, but I'll try to speed through it for you. Looking first, you can see that we had 783 participants in our survey. That broke out with our online survey, having 300 in English survey participants, and the online Spanish survey, we had 4 respondents. And actually, I know that I think I was one of the Spanish online, and I believe that Roger might have been one of the Spanish online participants. And with that, you know, I can stress the importance of making sure that we were reaching out also with a paper survey to our residents of Carson City, because as you know, we do service a huge population of our Latino residents in Carson City with our current programs. On the paper survey, we had, back on the online, 384, 371 paper survey in the English form and 28 in the Spanish survey. Although that only represents 4% of the total respondents being Spanish or Latino respondents, we did find in a lot of the community outreach and the public meetings that quite a few of our Latino residents were very comfortable filling out an English survey and also doing the English survey online. So I don't think the numbers truly reflect how many respondents we have that were either our Latino or our English-speaking residents. Continuing on, we asked, what was your age? And this is the respondents that were actually doing the survey. And if you look down, you know, you can go through. I also provided the 2008 U.S. Census data, so you can see if it's consistent with what the demographics of Carson City is. Going down, you can see that we've got consistently 4.3% were between 5 and 12. That I would say that's either the respondents that we are getting from the Boys and Girls Club or potentially one of the youth sports complexes with our outreach program. Continuing down, you can see how consistent we get when we, you know, get into the 26 to 34, 35 to 49-year-old respondents. We had 27.8% of our respondents being 35 to 49 years of age, and the U.S. Census data is 27.6. So you can see it truly reflects the demographics of Carson City based on the U.S. Census data from 2008. We also wanted to identify if you were male or female. 48.7% of the respondents were male. 51.3% of the respondents were female. Once again, very close to the U.S. Census data. We wanted to identify how long the respondents have lived in Carson City. As you can see, 57.5% of the respondents have lived in Carson City for 11 years or more. I thought that was a pretty interesting data, and I think that does reflect quite a few of our participants and also the consistency of the demographics of Carson City. Although this was kind of one of the questions that was in the survey at the beginning that a few people had some concerns with, we were asking, what is your yearly household income? I definitely had to talk to many of the respondents before they were comfortable taking the survey to make sure that they understood that not only were we singling out the IP address for a single user, but we weren't tracking IP addresses. So we weren't tracking the respondents of any one of the, or the information from any one of the respondents. With that, we had 13.3% of the respondents were making under $22,500 as a yearly household income. 47.8% were between $22,501 and $64,300. And 38.7% of our respondents make over $64,301 as a household income. This is important information for us as a division in the future. It will allow us to provide some of the needed data for potential grant funding. So although it's not necessarily going to be used in our needs assessment for programming, it definitely will be a tool for us in the future. That's why we included it in the survey. Next, we wanted to identify residents. We used the zip code to break out if you were a Carson City resident. Although I know our service population reaches outside of just Carson City, 81.87% of the respondents by zip code are from Carson City, with 18.13% coming from outside of Carson City.
Insert a comment here that when you look at the list of zip codes here, and that's how people identified, we asked for their zip code. You can see that people identified themselves as Carson City residents, whether they had a Carson City zip code or not. And so I guess kind of what might be interesting in the survey is that people really don't know where they're from, or that people who live outside of Carson City and use Carson City as a postal address, you know, as part of their address, really don't have a Carson City zip code. So that kind of illustrates what Joel mentioned, that we are a service provider outside of our corporate city and county limits.
Also, if you notice, before we go to the next slide, of the non-resident participants in the survey, you can see we actually had some participants from Oakland, San Jose. We've had a few questions in the survey results of how and why we would have those respondents. We happened to have a swim meet during one of the weekends that we were taking surveys at the aquatics facility. And we're not going to turn anyone away if they want to participate in our survey. So that's why we do have some from outside, far outside the area. Next, we wanted to identify the current use and or past use of participants in the survey of our facilities in Carson City. So we asked, how have you or any member of your household used the following CCRD facility within the past 12 months? Of the respondents, the community center, 37% said yes, and 63% obviously said no, that they have not used the facility in the last 12 months. Pretty consistent down with the community center meeting rooms, 37% said yes. The community center fitness rooms, 37% said they did use it in the last 12 months. The aquatics facility, 35% of the respondents. and the Bob Baldrick Theater, 35% of the respondents said they did use the facility within the last 12 months. We asked, how many times do you and your family use a CCRD indoor recreation facility in an average year? 45.1% said 5 times or less, 15.7, 6 to 10, 12.9%, 11 to 19, and 26.3% of the respondents said that they do use our facilities more than 20 times in an average year. Have you or any member of your household used a city, county-operated aquatics facility outside of Carson City within the past 12 months? In these questions, we did also ask where and why. So I do have the data of where and why if they did leave the community so that we can see if that leakage and if we can address that for hopefully bringing them back in or keeping them into Carson City. I can say, though, that a lot of the answers, I think, once again, some of the respondents didn't understand that maybe the Marriott in Sacramento wasn't a city or county-operated aquatics facility. But we definitely did see some leakage to some municipality-operated facilities.
Excuse me, Joel. Yes. Also, that the whole swim meet might have skewed that if they were from outside the area and regularly swim in another facility.
Yeah. Yeah. So the first question was for the aquatic facility. 24.8% said yes, that a member of their household or that they have used a city or county operated facility outside of Carson City. 75.2% said no. Same question for performance theater. 16.2% said yes, 83.8% said no. Have you or a member of your household operated at, or used a city or county operated fitness room? 6.4% said yes, 93.6% no. A gymnasium or court outside of Carson City, 7.9% yes, and 92.1% no. And also following up with the meeting rooms, 7.6% and 92.4%.
Oh, Joel, quick question. I know that Robin is probably correct when she says that those numbers were skewed with respect to people using facilities outside of Carson City, aquatic facilities, but I noticed in the comments section there were a lot of people who kept comparing our facility to the Minden facility, so it's quite possible if they travel to Minden to use that facility because there, as I understand it, there is more of an opportunity for open swim. So.
That's right. We found that really interesting because we hear comments a lot in our department that people take their families down to Minden to use that aquatics facility because you're right, ours is more of a lap swim kind of competitive type facility. And we found it interesting that we didn't have a higher percentage of people stating that they use that facility in the survey. So, you know, sometimes I think you find, and there's another issue here about racquetball, I think sometimes you find that you have a very passionate and very vocal special interests that'll make comments, but it doesn't bear out sometimes in the survey in results.
Okay, continuing on the next slide, we start to look into the demographics of who and why and what we should serve in Carson City and the programs that we should serve them with. We asked if Carson City Recreation was to offer new program activities, how would you prioritize the age-appropriate programming? And in recreation, we definitely break up our programs. Although you can serve all demographics with a volleyball program, how you offer that program and run the program is definitely different. Volleyball in Carson City for the youth, our program is a very instructional. We don't actually play games until the end, but it's a very learning volleyball program, our adult volleyball game. They just come in and it's company teams and they play. So, you know, we address each one of the programs and the demographics differently, but it's important to break it up. And these are also the breakup, the national standards of how recreation programming is broke up. But if you can see the respondents, and I'd like to reflect back that, you know, we talked about the fact that 57% were 35 and above, or 57% were 35 and above in our respondents, but they weren't self-serving in their questions. They did reach out and say, listen, as a community, we need to serve the teens first, the teens being 13 to 17. 34% said that should be our first priority as a recreation division, with 638 respondents saying that it was in their top three, followed closely by the youth, 5 to 12, and then it kind of drops off in the total number of respondents saying that it would be in their top three priorities. Kind of disheartening was the fact that both on the online and the paper survey consistent throughout was programs that are designed for disabled participants. The only saving grace is I think that we, with our Movers and Doers program, actually have probably one of the top regional programs that provides these participants programming today. So continuing on from the following list of indoor activities, check the activities in which you and or your family would pay to participate if offered. This isn't just a list. I think that if we just put a list of programs together, I'd probably check everything off. But if I have to pay to play, I'm probably going to break it out a little bit different. And if I look through the surveys as we collected the data, people didn't just mark, you know, all 24 and or other. They marked the programs they truly would pay to play. If you look down, you know, the top pay-to-play programming would be baseball and softball cages with 39.2%, followed closely with performing arts and aquatic fitness, 36.7%. Very consistent all the way down through, you know, 14, 15, 16, when you look at the programs that the respondents say they would pay to play. I think you also can see that, you know, as a programmer, I'm going to look at these and say, okay, they've told us now as a community they'd like to make sure that we are offering programs for teens and youth as a priority in Carson City. I'll go down this list and the next list, which is prioritizing those programs, and see how we can address and or offer the programs, or if we're not currently doing it in Carson City.
Just another additional comment here. Normally, when you look at a list like this and you look at the percentages and the corresponding counts, you kind of look for natural breaks. And for instance, you may look down and go about five or six, seven activities down, and you'll see a natural break in terms of percentages, you know, maybe 5% or greater. And what's really interesting about these results is that there really isn't much of a natural break. It's all fairly consistent between, you know, the first and the second. There's only about a 3% change, less than a 3% change. And that's pretty consistent all the way down. So it shows that I think that there's a wide variety and diversified interests in the community.
You know, one of the things before I actually go to the prioritized list, that we broke out all of the data by collectors. So we actually have data that we can identify just the Spanish version, the online version. Breaking out some of the community events that we held here in Carson City Recreation Center, that was primarily some of our Latino citizens in Carson City coming in and taking our survey. And looking at the results, I, as a programmer, would have had some assumptions of the type of programs that we would have offered for that demographic in Carson City. But based on the pay-to-play, some of the historical programs, the handball, you know, the pickleball, some of those that I would have felt may have been on the top, they weren't. They were very consistent with the surveys that came in across all of the demographics of Carson City.
Just another comment, too, to add to that. We also compared the results of this survey with a survey that we put out in 2005 as part of the Park and Recreation Master Plan. And that's exactly what we found there, too, because we did put out a separate Spanish survey as part of that. And what we found is that there was really very little statistical difference between the results in the English-speaking survey and the Spanish-speaking survey in terms of what their needs and desires were for park and recreation programs and facilities.
Moving on to the next slide, I actually, in between that, I did include other. As other, one of the things I didn't want to do was limit, although we used the top 10 national standards for recreation programming, and we used, you know, all of the current requests within our community for programming, we added other. As you can see by some of the respondents, I don't think some of them necessarily understand what can be offered as an indoor recreation program. But also, there's quite a few that we already currently offer, from, you know, our newest and quickest growing class with Zumba here at the community center, on down to football. There is arena football.
Okay, all right,
football.
Now I have to interrupt. What is Zumba dance?
Zumba is kind of a Latino flair aerobics activity that either can be held inside a classroom or an aquatic component. We've got an instructor that put in an RFP, and I can tell you that quickly in the first 3 weeks that she outgrew the Comstock room and has now moved into the Tahoe room with her class.
Really?
And I think over the winter months, I don't know if we'll have enough space in the gym to hold that class. It is one of the quickest growing classes or aerobics classes nationwide.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But going down, you know, that list, you can look at all of the different activities that, you know, were listed as other. there definitely were some consistencies and some groups that I think Roger mentioned there. You know, you get a collective group that makes sure that they reach out and tell all of our participants to get in and do a survey. But there's definitely some that we didn't think about that I think we may be able to currently offer in our existing community center or hopefully in a future family recreation center. Okay. Now, this kind of breaks out this next slide. This is where we're actually going to prioritize your top three preferred activities. This is probably the most useful numbers for future programming that we'll use in Carson City. From the following list, prioritize you and your family's top three preferred activities. Now, although you're going to see some changes between this and just the pay-to-play list, but they're very consistent. You know, a few jumped up in based on, I think, probably current participation in certain programs and or the pay-to-play options on the beginning. But going down the list, if you look, the top preferred program from the participants was performing arts, followed by baseball, softball cages, aquatic fitness, running, walking track, soccer, futsal. It kind of breaks down in numerical order all the way through 24 with, you know, kickball, handball, and pickleball being the last few programs that they would prefer as an activity in Carson City. Now, how I would use this as a tool for future programming is we'd start first with the top priority from the respondents, performing arts. And now how can we reach out to the teen demographic, the identified demographic to serve first, with performing arts in Carson City? And I can tell you we're already moving forward in trying to reach out based on the needs assessment survey. We're identifying some potential partners within the community that we can use during the summer months to offer some unavailable nights in the Bob Bolger Theater, some teen programming for performing arts.
Joe, I didn't see that in the survey, that teens were a high voter of performing arts. I see performing arts as a group of all ages, but I didn't see that. And maybe I don't want to take you all the way back, but I didn't see that as just teens. I thought maybe it included other ages.
And that's a good question. You know, Supervisor Livermore, when we look at programs, and I touched on the fact that if we were to try to break out the demographics per program or event, we would have had a survey that would probably be hundreds of pages long. By identifying first the demographic that we need to serve, then we can identify how we would do that based on prioritized programming.
Well, I understand that, but more than 60% of the respondents were in the top two, 34 to plus 50 age brackets.
Correct.
So I can't understand how you take the teen component out of that and make it that it's scored heavy.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, isn't it, in response to the question, if Carson City Recreation was to offer new programs, activities, how would you prioritize the age-appropriate programming? I think a lot of the people in the older demographic are parents who want to provide useful activities for their children. And as I read this, it's about 61% identified, you know, instituting new programs for kids between the ages of 5 and 17. Is that okay?
And taking the opportunity, you know, we're going to find as a division, when you go down the prioritized list of programs or activities, we're already reaching out to a lot of the demographics, the teens and the youth with some of these programming. So then we would move on to another prioritized program. In performing arts, I think that the area that we probably need to improve on and reaching out would be the teens in that age demographic. I think that with the adults and the youth that we kind of are meeting some of those niches in our performing arts. So, you know, looking at and working with Mitch Ames and partners within the community, we'll look at potentially offering some programming and performing arts geared towards the teens. Moving down the line, you know, the same thing. We'd move to the next one with baseball and softball cages. Carson City Recreation currently does not offer baseball or softball cages in the community. I know Little League is looking at building a facility out at the Governor's Complex. Now, in the future, we'll find if that will meet the needs for the community or just the programming of Little League. And then we, as a division, can address if we need to add additional baseball or softball cages. That would be one of those that, you know, we could do in our current facility. But as you continue down the list, you're going to find that you get quickly to number four with a running and walking track. As a preferred activity in Carson City, a running walking track, We currently cannot offer that, nor could we make the improvements to our current facility to offer a running walking track. That's when this needs assessment survey starts to look at facilities rather than just programming.
Yeah, but I'd like to make a comment here, too. When we look at the prioritized activities, if you look at the first three, performing arts, baseball, softball cages, aquatic fitness, you can see that they're very strong in the first priority. And then they really kind of taper off as you get down to the second and third priority. And then when you get beyond there, it's kind of interesting. You look at running, walking track, and some of the others, they're not so high as a first priority, but they tend to gain strength as a second and third priority. And so I think what that is really kind of telling us is that those are sort of secondary uses. If you went to a facility, you may go there for a primary reason. It might be baseball cages or performing arts or aquatics, yet you may have a strong interest in a second activity of using a walking track. Or you may be primarily to do an activity that you're there, that your children are there for, such as swimming. But while they're swimming, you may want to engage in a secondary activity as well.
But and looking at this chart also, I mean, there's lots. The number five, soccer, football. There's 198 people say that's their first priority, and so then it drops off. So that tells me there's a certainly an engaged and very, very supportive element that wants some additional facilities, indoor facilities for that.
And, staying on that one, when you look at the soccer futsal programming in Carson City, our soccer futsal program offered for adults in Carson City is, we started that back when the board set as one of their priorities and goals to reach out to the Latino community for programming. And we've had an amazing amount of success with the program. I'm looking at probably by the time we have our indoor futsal program wrap up in January of 2011, we could have anywhere between 1,500 and 1,700 paid participants in that program. Obviously, the largest program that we're offering currently in Carson City Recreation. So, but if I was to look at the age demographics, we're not offering soccer or futsal for teens or youth. So that becomes, when you're looking at the top five, an immediate need based on the needs assessment in Carson City.
Joe, would you be able to offer that, or do you have enough gym space?
Yeah, unfortunately, the one thing that we've been faced with over the past several years is we do have a declining ability to offer new programming because of our limited indoor recreation space. And when you look at some of these programs, you also have to make sure that you stay within traditional seasons. Although we may have a few available weeks or weekends during the summer months to offer maybe an indoor soccer or a futsal program for the youth and teens, that's typically when they're playing in their organized youth sports programs in Carson City out on grass. So it wouldn't be advantageous for us to offer it during the summer months. So when you see a lot of these programming, it is very consistent that they happen in, that shoulder season for recreation, which is the winter months. That's when we're very limited with our indoor space. Okay. I think that we've had an opportunity to reach out and hopefully reach every demographic of the residents in Carson City with our survey. The last portion of the survey was actually asking what improvements to the current Carson City indoor recreation facilities would increase the overall quality of experience for you and your family. Being an open-ended question, I didn't put this in the PowerPoint presentation because it's pages long, but it's very useful information for us as a division. Sometimes you need that constructive criticism so that you can address changes within your programming or improvements within your facilities. And I can say that we intend to definitely, if there's a need and a fit for these changes, to address them for our current programs. I think.
Joe, Roger. Yes, Supervisor Livermore.
Joe, years ago there were batting cages at St. Daniel, and I think the foundation is kind of still out there. That was a privately run, and, I've seen that out there. Have we made any attempt to either engage someone else or put out a RFP to see if someone's interested in providing that?
To answer your question, over the many many years that I've been now with Carson City Recreation.
Nice to see you in those cages.
Yeah, absolutely. Every time that we've addressed the need for batting cages in Carson City and looked at it as potential programming for Carson City, somebody within the community looks at it as a business opportunity. And at that time, we've backed off. We've had quite a few open up and unfortunately fail within Carson City to run batting cages as a business. It's also one of those, unfortunately, that at Centennial, and Rob Love, a current employee, ran privately ran the softball cages out at Centennial. It was very useful for just those participants within the program on site at Centennial, but because it wasn't offered during the winter months, which is typically where a lot of the kids will want to continue and use the batting cages, or preseason, that January, February, March time, those are the big times for the indoor batting cages, and they just can't use them with an outdoor batting cage.
For everyone's information, there are several other batting cages. There's a couple at Governor's Field and one to be constructed at Edmonds Park yet. We're working on trying to, you know, acquire the donations to make that happen. But, yes, they sit there during the winter months when people are, you know, but what I liked about the ones at Centennial, Joel, is, and I didn't play softball, but, you know, my family did, and they would go out there prior to the game like anybody else does, get into batting cages and adjust your swing, see the ball, and things like that. And so maybe the intensity of the commercial ones, and I would encourage, you know, it's difficult to compare against those. So I would encourage you to take a look at, you know, how to reinstitute that. If this survey identified as a need for this, the need may be because that's the time when they want to use it, even though commercials have invested, just has not generated enough interest for the mainstream players. You know, so.
And I think in the larger sense, you bring up a good point that, you know, recreation doesn't have to be only provided by a public entity. It can be provided by, you know, the private sector as well. And so if there's a shortage or a perceived need in some area of recreation, it doesn't necessarily have to be just from the public sector or the public entity to provide. It could come from the private sector. A lot of times I think when you see batting cages associated with athletic fields, athletic field complexes, the perception by the general public is that that's not open for just everybody to use, and it's just only in conjunction with, you know, the participants involved in baseball or softball activities. Some commercial and some public indoor batting cages are tremendously popular just for the people who aren't involved in organized baseball. Yeah, or softball, just like to go down and take swings at the ball. And so that might suggest that possibly we could incorporate drop-down type batting cages, you know, in an indoor facility that would come down and be used, on, you know, be available on some type of routine frequency.
Anything else, Pete? Supervisor Ball.
Okay, now, with the information that has been given, in the minutes it mentioned that there was a suggestion about with the toddler pool, you know, because like Supervisor Aldean suggested that there are people going to Mend, and we realize that families are there, and you had mentioned that there you have been looking into something in regards to making it more, I guess, family friendly.
Are you referring to our aquatics facility?
Yeah, because in the Parks and Rec Commission meeting on July 13th, mm-hmm. it was inquired by one of the commissioners that possibly making improving the toddler pool or expanding it, and then you had mentioned that there that consideration has been given to enhancing or expanding the toddler pool.
Yeah, and I would have to say there hasn't been serious consideration in terms of, you know, doing sort of conceptual drawings or pricing, you know, but doing budgeting of what that would cost. But in general, we've had discussions among staff and with other, you know, other people. The idea of would it be possible to make some changes to our existing aquatic facility to make it more of a leisure pool type of concept, and maybe that would include expanding the top pool
area. Very descriptive of what happens.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it might be. I got to be careful with that one. But you know, and what people are looking for generally in those type of facilities are zero depth entry pools, you know, fountains, sprays, lazy rivers, and that type of thing. Obviously, we wouldn't be able to provide that without a considerable capital investment into the facility, but we're always trying to think of some ways that maybe we can make that more attractive to those type of users. We just know that that's going to be a pretty significant cost. We haven't gone that far yet with it. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. And then, you know, at the, what I believe it was last January, December 2010, that, you know, the reason for this needs assessment and why we were doing it. So can you give the board an update of where we're at with now that the needs assessment is done, where are we with the reasoning?
Well, we're, you know, we're still kind of in the synthesizing the information to some degree, but what we hope to do is, and I was going to use some of this including remarks, and I'll just kind of jump to that and some of the conclusions that we have derived from this, and I want this
well,
to...
Before you do that, there may be other board comments and public comments, so
okay.
Can we delay your wrap-up?
We certainly can,
okay.
Yeah.
I just had a couple of comments, and you and I had this discussion, Roger, offline. There seemed to be some emerging themes based on the written comments that were submitted about the need for, the drastic need for improvements to the theater here, especially with respect to the replacement of seats. I understand that's underway. I mean, that's part of our upgrade program. The other thing that was repeatedly said is that we have a facility called the Pony Express Pavilion that is grossly underutilized because it's exposed to the elements. And I know that one time we did a feasibility analysis, I think, to determine what it would cost to enclose that facility, but it's an existing facility that I think has enormous potential to meet some of these outstanding needs. I think it could be home to walking tracks. I think it'd be the drop-down batting cages. I mean, and I think we need to take a serious look at, you know, at improving that facility to make it usable year-round. And I wonder if your department has given any further consideration to what that might involve.
You know, we haven't given a lot of consideration to that since about 2005, I think, when we first started our initial survey of locations, appropriate locations for an indoor recreation facility. One of the things that we looked at, and I would have to, you know, kind of go back and research some of our notes, but one of the concerns about enclosing the existing Pony Express Pavilion would be the engineering that would have to be done, because the roof itself was designed and calculated for a certain type of load, and once you start enclosing the facility, you could change the dynamics of that engineering, and there may have to be some rebuilding of the roof of that facility. One of the things I've always found interesting about the Pony Express Pavilion, and Supervisor Williamson will remember this, we had a proposal from an ice skating rink operator who wanted to put a full-time outdoor, you know, the covered, but the outdoor ice skating rink in that facility and run it year-round. And we brought that to the Park and Recreation Commission. I'm sure Supervisor Livermore remembers this too. And when I first came to Carson City, all I ever heard about was how useless the Pony Express Pavilion was. You know, it wasn't good for anything. And what a mistake it was. And so we brought that proposal to the Park and Recreation Commission, and I think we had two meetings on it, if I remember correctly, and this room was packed with people who didn't want to see any changes done to the Pony Express Pavilion because it was the most wonderful facility in Carson City. And so, you know, in my first month in Carson City, the Pony Express Pavilion went from the most useless facility that was ever created to the most valuable facility that we had. And it was a little bit head spinning, but that facility gets more use than we think it does. It doesn't mean that some of those uses couldn't continue in an enclosed, in a closed manner, though. In fact, probably most of them could. So I guess that's still an option that we certainly could consider, more thoroughly.
Well, an option that was recommended, I think, and suggested in the notes had to do with drop-down curtains, some barriers that you could drop from the roof, you know, to at least mitigate the wind. And help to insulate the facility during the winter months. So I think it's something that's still worth investigating because – and do you have any statistics, Roger, while we're talking about the pavilion with respect to how many days of the year it's actually used? I suspect that the recommendation to convert it into a full-time ice skating rink would have precluded some of the other activities like inline hockey, and so I understand why people were opposed to that because it takes it out of service for other activities. But do you have any statistical data?
I don't have those with me, but I can tell you that it is a year-round used facility. During this time of the year, it's used heavily by the inline hockey folks, of course. We also have the farmers market that is there every Wednesday night. We have our summer camp kids use of that facility. It's used a lot for special events. You know, we have coming up here next month the Boys and Girls Club world famous barbecue event. That's what called world famous.
World's best.
There we go. And you know, we've had campaign rallies in there. It's just a tremendously used facility, and it, as I mentioned before, it gets a lot more use than what you would normally suspect. We can put that information together for the board if you'd be interested in having that.
I would be personally. Okay. I'd like to take a look at that facility. Okay. And the only other question I had is, Roger, do we typically, you mentioned earlier that we have put out RFPs, and I think we need to maybe be a little more aggressive about doing that. If there is an activity that we cannot provide because of a lack of capital or a lack of existing facilities, then I think we need to reach out to the private sector and see if they can fulfill those needs.
In fact, we're actually doing that, and Joel's been very, very aggressive of late with that. It's not only a matter of facilities. We do have a dearth of facilities, real shortage there, but we also have a shortage of available personnel and manpower to really conduct a lot of programs ourselves. And so we have now been going out and been much more aggressive with trying to get contract fitness classes in our facilities. And Joel mentioned the Zumba class just a little bit earlier. That is an example of one of the contracted fitness classes. We moved one of the activities for kids out of the Tahoe room, and we've converted that back to a fitness room. We have yoga classes in there. We have spinning classes. We have traditional aerobic classes being held in there now that we didn't have before that are very popular. And now we're seeing also correspondingly a growth in some aquatic fitness classes in the aquatics facility too. So we are really expanding that area, but we're kind of hitting a threshold right now, and that is just no more room. But we certainly intend to look in that area, because I think in order to provide the services that we're kind of being told in surveys and even contacts with the public outside of the survey, in order to provide those type of needs, we're going to have to look at the private sector to help us out.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Supervisor Livermore.
When we had those meetings with the ice skating proposal, Roger, one of the things came out of the meeting was the cost of displacement. The current programs that are in there would, and I guess if you can do a survey, you're going to do some report to the board. Maybe you need to address where a displacement would occur. Where would you move the inline hockey people to, the other components that are in there? And it was surprising. I think Roger expressed it completely correctly about most of us drive by that place and look at it, and you don't have a sense of what's going on in there. It is one of the, probably, as they tell it, one of the heaviest use facilities that's available there. So I just ask you to make a component part of your report of displacement, what it would cost and where we would move them to.
We can certainly do that in our analysis of, you know, how much that facility is being used and what would be the effect of enclosing it in some manner. Part of that would be what would be the activities that it would displace, if any, and we could, you know, put that together as part of the analysis too.
I think that's a good suggestion. Thank you, Roger. Supervisor Williams.
Yes, and just briefly, I have tried to figure out things to do with the Pony Express Pavilion throughout my career here, and I mean we're the ones, I mean, through redevelopment, moved the farmers market down from, it was on 3rd Street down to the Pony Express Pavilion, and that's been well received, good parking and the shade. And also we did, in addition to the ice skating rink proposal, we did a musical concert series, remember one summer there, trying to improve the acoustics there, and about killed all of us for Fridays and Saturdays for eight weeks or whatever it is. But so we've tried different things to increase the uses. I think certainly we can, and some of the uses that were, such as Oktoberfest and some of the events that were regularly scheduled for the Pony Express Pavilion when we discussed the ice skating rink, have now moved on and found different locations. And so I think we can certainly look at those numbers and what the possibilities are. I do want to also say, you know, the the Western Nevada College Foundation Athletic Development Committee, and there are three members here. We're looking at trying to raise funds for the softball field, women's softball on the college campus, and there is a batting cage component to that, and perhaps we could see if those would be indoors, or I'm guessing, are they outdoors? But anyway, we could take a look at some of the options and use that as possibly a revenue source too for the communities using it. But I do think the partnerships with the private enterprises, there have been people that have been scouting vacant warehouse buildings for years trying to develop indoor soccer. That's what up in the Reno Sparks area, they're all pretty much private enterprises as opposed to funded by municipalities. So I think perhaps in this economic climate there might be opportunities for people to develop small businesses using our recreation as an attraction. And so we certainly need to pursue those partnerships.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments by members of the board? We'll open it up for public comment. Any comments by members of the public? There they are. In mass. Good morning, Janice.
I'm going to just come and listen today. Janice Baldwin. And the one thing I wanted to address with the survey is I'm a racquetball person, and it was clear down at 17. And I just wanted to say that I was at a YMCA clear back in the 70s when I learned to play racquetball. And they had a running track and everything. So we're really behind the eight ball here. And you've all the things that were number one, two, and three, and four, and five already are here. Great soccer programs, great softball programs through the high school, the little leagues, and all of that. So that's why a parent taking a survey would say that's what they want. The arts, beautiful arts program. I just want to compliment our community for having such a wonderful arts program. And so those things are already exposed to the people. People are mentally thinking soccer, softball, performing arts. So I would say with racquetball, if you build it, they will come. Because I when we lived in Urington, my friends were avid racquetball players, moved in from another town, and she wanted to play racquetball every single day. And she would travel wherever there was a racquetball court. There used to be the one up on the hill, and they would come over at least once a week. Reno doesn't even have racquetball courts. I mean, if you build it, they will come to Carson City to play. So it's one of those things, and it's not a high maintenance. That's the wonderful thing. You can charge for it. It is a cost-effective event. Like some of these things, you can't even charge. The skate park, fabulous facility for the young people. But we get no revenue from it. And so racquetball is one of those things that we can get revenue from. So if you build it, they will come.
Thank you, Janice. And actually, that's a nice segue into the next item. I've been requested, I'm sure everybody on the board received a copy of this letter from David Smith, and he has asked me to read it into the record. But before I do, let's hear from Mr. McKenna.
Please go right ahead and read Mr. Smith's record into the record if you wish.
No, go ahead, John.
I don't want to break your train of thought here. John McKenna. A question is, how many of these needs on the survey would be filled by building the voter-approved and funded recreation center? And then the other question is, what about using existing vacant warehouse and retail space on a one-season basis just to meet the need? I see when you deal with the Parks and Recreation Commission thing, as Roger knows, I can't get up and not comment on it, but there's a lot of places like, hopefully the Kmart building will be full, but you could put in a football or some type of recreation program in there for one season and maybe defer some of their rents and then even possibly make money, because I think most of Joel's programs make money or at least break even. So,
okay, thank you, John. Did you want to respond?
To John's comments.
Well, I think that the question regarding his first question regarding the status of the recreational facility will be addressed in your concluding remarks, right?
Yeah, will be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Then would you like to defer comment until after I read this into the record?
That'd be fine.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Any other public comment? All right. Seeing none. This is a letter we received dated August 31st, 2010 from David M. Smith, who's a local Carson City resident. This information is submitted in response to the Carson City Board of Supervisors Agenda Item 11 for the September 2nd, 2010 meeting. Since I may be unable to attend this meeting due to my work schedule, I request this be read into the record and my written comments be made a part of the minutes of the meeting. I reviewed the results of the survey and the recommendation by Mr. Mollendorf, which indicates that the priority should be an indoor facility focused toward teen activities, including basketball and volleyball. While I appreciate the efforts of Mr. Mollendorf and the Parks and Recreation Department, I believe this needs assessment lacks critical information, specifically the number and types of existing recreational facilities in the community. Without knowing the number of existing indoor and outdoor basketball courts, tennis courts, walking facilities, etc., how can a determination be made as to what is truly needed? For the last several years, there have been no commercially available racquetball courts in Carson City. The local gyms remove them or won't invest in them because they can squeeze a dozen or more machines into the same space one racquetball court would occupy. Racquetball is a sport enjoyed by people of all ages, including teenagers. There are a large number of players in Carson City who have stopped playing or are forced to travel to Reno to play. I was one of those who used to travel to Reno to play, but now don't play at all because of the travel costs. I know a great number of people, a great number of other players who feel the same way. A survey conducted in 2005 by the Parks and Recreation Department substantiated the need for racquetball courts, and this survey shows again that there is still a need for racquetball courts in Carson City. However, comments regarding any racquetball courts in a community recreational facility are absent from the recommendation by the Parks Department. I would like to point out that a high school-sized basketball court playing area, 84 feet by 50 feet, takes up 4,200 square feet. One racquetball court, 20 feet by 40 feet, takes up 800 square feet. Five racquetball courts could exist in the space of one basketball court. Considering only 10 basketball players can play on a court, five per team, and racquetball may include singles, two players, or doubles, four players, five racquetball courts can accommodate twice as many players than a basketball court will. Of note, racquetball courts can be set up for volleyball and volleyball, a variation of volleyball, period. Because of the current lack of racquetball facilities, I believe that any comprehensive recreational facility in Carson City must include at least four racquetball courts. I fear, however, that the Parks and Rec Department is stuck on building a gym, in quotations, for more basketball instead of providing other important amenities that are absent from our community. As a result, I respectfully request that that instead of accepting this survey and recommendation by the Parks Department, that the Board of Supervisors request additional information to include the number of existing indoor and outdoor recreational facilities that are currently available in Carson City, including those facilities in the schools that were constructed using tax dollars. An alternate request would be that the Board direct the Parks and Recreation Department to include at least four racquetball courts in any facility design it intends to have drafted. Thank you for your time and consideration. Please feel free to contact me if you have any questions regarding this request. Sincerely, David M. Smith. Do you care to comment on that letter, or Supervisor Livermore?
Several years ago, we had a park commissioner by the name of Commissioner Patton, and he was an avid racquetball player, and we had several hearings over a period of about 3 or 4 or 5 months during this period of time when we decided the priority uses of the rec center that was under consideration long before it went to the architectural design. And it actually came down to the fact that there were potential uses, but the numbers didn't justify the square footage application that it would and the operation cost of it. One component of it that you can't guarantee in this is if you had 2, 3, whatever number you had, and you built a reasonable program, what always happens is that private investment follows your success. They'll open one at someplace in town, and the business will just go that way. Once you construct these things, they're there for a long period of time. You just don't drop the curtain down and make it happen. It's a matter of a square footage and the cost of that. So the commission at that time didn't view that as, although it was a need, as a priority need, because the numbers of participants and other things were so high and demanding, and the square footage that we had to work with, it just got eventually dropped from the thought. And I'm sure Roger can go back and dig all that information back out. There was a huge, intensive, like I said, 3 or 4 months debate about the, a racquetball component to that. So I'm not suggesting one way or the other way. I just said that there were testimony, there were information given that can be revisited. But I'll just tell you that that's what I remember of the findings of the commission at that time. It, the cost didn't justify the potential users there. So
I have to admit, when I was, my husband and I were two of those people that voted for the racquetball courts. We grew up, our community had a rack, and it was privately owned. It was a privately owned racquetball court slash fitness center. And so, you know, I mean, it was great to have that. We had it in college. The high school I grew up in even had 3 racquetball courts underneath the our swimming center. So, you know, I mean, it is there. However, I do see that, you know, and Janice's comment saying that, you know, when parents are saying, you know, that this is what is their main priority because it is already there, you know, I don't know. And you know, I trust that you're going to do your job, and the fact that the commission has already spoke about this also. But, you know, there isn't just the volleyball that can be used in there. You know, I've seen the racquetball courts that have had the spinning classes in it. They've had aerobics classes in it. They've had, art classes, you know, that it has been, you know, used for multi-use, that when people aren't using them, you know, you could use it for the kids' club or, you know, different places like that. So, I mean, it is, I think what's being asked right now is, you know, is it worthy to look into if there isn't some place that we could? I know within, you're going to address this in your closing comments, that with the architect that's being out there, you know, there are rooms that are set aside for meeting rooms or I think there was art rooms, different things that if you built the shell, you know, I don't know if there isn't, because you, even though we're looking at to possibly this additional gym would be housed on the by the Boys and Girls Club, you know, that is programming too that I don't know that they didn't answer, or if that demographics didn't answer, saying because they don't know what it is. You know, my kids don't know what it is unless we travel up to Montana and they actually get a chance to play there. So I don't know, you know, whether or not that is why the needs couldn't have been higher. But, you know, with that auxiliary gym, if there isn't the possibility of adding it and that it would be something that the community would embrace.
Thank you, Molly. You know, pursuant to John McKenna's suggestion, you know, in terms of testing the waters and determining what the demand is, if we could find a temporary location for a racquetball, you know, facility, and see how well utilized it is, then we could perhaps justify dedicating some space, city-owned space.
Well, let me try to maybe answer both of those issues that were brought up. And I guess I want to preface what I say about racquetball courts, and I think it's a tremendously wonderful activity, great sport. It's great for fitness. If it can be a family sport with fathers and mothers and daughters and sons all playing together. But unfortunately, what we've seen in racquetball, the trend is just not very good. And we know that recreational activities tend to be trendy. You know, they kind of move up and down and through the course of the years. But racquetball really kind of hit a peak in terms of popularity probably in the late 80s, early 90s. And then from there, it really dropped off, you know, pretty quickly. Why that happens, I don't know. And I know that recreation centers back in the 80s and 90s were constructing many racquetball courts as part of their facilities. And then they started becoming, well, now what do we do with these racquetball courts that aren't being used? And that's why they put spinning classes in them and art classes and those type of things, because it's very, very comparable to our Pony Express Pavilion. You have something you're trying to do something with. And racquetball, for whatever reason, has really dropped off. Not many recreation centers are building as many or even including racquetball center facilities as they have in the past. One problem with racquetball is there are only 800 square feet, but there really are only two really very good uses for them, and that is one is racquetball and one is volleyball. The reference made to a basketball court. Basketball court has much better opportunities for multiple type of uses, not just basketball, 10 people playing on a large court. You know, we looked at this survey that we just conducted. We also looked at the survey that was conducted back in 2005. And if I can just give you maybe a couple, some of the data that came from those two surveys, it kind of illustrates, I think, where we are in racquetball. And I think we ought to keep the door open on racquetball, and maybe we need to do a more detailed survey on racquetball to find out what kind of interest there is. But if you look back at the 2005 survey, question number 8 in there was, what recreation facilities in other communities did your household use? And racquetball was listed, but only 1% of the respondents said racquetball. Now, I don't know why that is. Maybe because there aren't opportunities, you know, outside of Carson City for people to go to use the facilities. Probably the question that had the most compelling case for racquetball was question number 12 that said, if the following activities were available at a city recreation center, would you most likely do the following in a health club or in a city recreation facility? So they listed 4 activities, and basic question was, would you prefer to do those in a recreational city facility or a health club? And 69% of the people said they would prefer to do racquetball in a city facility. But again, you have to understand what that question is really asking. You know, it's basically saying, if you like racquetball, would you rather play in a health club or a city facility? And 69% indicated it'd be a city facility.
Roger, isn't the presumption also that it would be less costly in a city-owned facility?
Well, that could be. You know,
private club?
That might be. Question number 17 in the 2005 survey said, please select how important you feel it is to add the following facilities to a recreation facility. And they listed 30, and out of that 30, racquetball is 24th. And so, you know, we're finding that racquetball, as I mentioned, I think, earlier today, there's a lot of passion with racquetball, and there's a lot of interest and passion with the people who enjoy using it, but it doesn't seem to have, for whatever reason, wide community support or appeal to it. And in the survey we just conducted, again, just go over some of those results. One of the questions was, from the following list, check the activities which you or your family would pay to participate in. And again, out of the 24 listed, racquetball is 17th. And then the other one was, prioritize you and your family's top 3 preferred activities. And out of the 24, racquetball moved up a little bit, but it was still 15th. That doesn't mean that there shouldn't be any investment into racquetball courts, I don't think. But I think what it says is it's probably a low priority when compared to some of the other expressed needs and desires that we have gleaned out of the survey. So now the question is, could we provide maybe some temporary racquetball facilities to see if there's some interest? And John brought up the idea of possibly using some warehouses or empty buildings in the community. One of the things that we find out is that very few of these warehouses or empty storefronts were really, of course, built with recreation activities planned as part of them. They have poles in the middle, and they have very few of them have clear span roofs. And so it's very difficult to run activities such as indoor soccer, even building a racquetball court when you have to work around all these darn poles. It could make the activity much more interesting. You know, you have to pad the poles, but And so we have actually looked at a couple facilities. One was an old facility down here off Curry Street. We have looked at those with the idea of possibly being able to do that. One of the problems, I think, is that the question would be, do we want to put a significant expenditure into those facilities to get them to the point where they're acceptable to use that activity to find out whether the activity is going to be successful or not? You know, so I think that's kind of one of the questions that we have to kind of balance. Any questions or comments? Joel, did you have a comment about racquetball?
Actually, I'd like to just add to Roger's comments. And also one of the other concerns that Mr. Smith had that's actually kind of a misconception in the community. First, when we look at facilities, Mr. Smith mentioned about looking into a partnership with the school district with their gyms. When we look at our current programming, we are the primary user of all gyms in Carson City. That includes the gyms that are available to us through the joint use agreement with the school district, and also we have a use agreement with the state of Nevada for the Stewart Gym. We are the primary user of all of those facilities in Carson City. On any given night, you could have youth basketball at the Stewart Gym. We'll have volleyball at Carson Middle School. We'll have, you know, the futsal program using the other gyms in Carson. So we definitely are reaching out and looking at all available facilities. You know, talking about the Pony Express Pavilion, when we look at future programming, it definitely is one of those spaces we'll look at for potential programming based on this needs assessment. It's not out of question to bring new programming in and or move programming. One of the things that I'm given a task to do, and actually Mr. McKenna mentioned this, is I have to cover 100% of all direct costs to operate programs in Carson City. It's very difficult under that mandate to bring in new programs unless I'm confident that it'll have very quick success or immediate success so that I can recapture the cost. I can tell you right now, every program that we run within recreation, from after school, morning latchkey, to every sport all the way down to volleyball, not only recaptures 100% of its direct costs, but also puts quite a bit towards the indirect costs to operate the programs. So, you know, we definitely are reaching out, finding every available space. We've ran into a lot of limitations on facilities not owned by Carson City, but we've continued to look.
Okay. Thank you. And I think Pete's point was that, you know, if you can prove on a temporary basis the viability of an activity, then it may be taken over by an entrepreneur or private sector person, you know, who and given up, you know, willingly by the Parks and Rec Department. So anyway, something just to keep in mind. Roger, are you prepared to make your closing remarks and recommendations?
Yeah, I think a lot of the points have already been made, but I will cover maybe some of them that haven't. You know, when you look through surveys, it's always kind of fun to find out what are the surprises and what are the interesting, you know, information that you find. And some of the interesting information we found, although this is not too surprising, is that there is a strong interest in performing arts in our community. And that was, again, bore out in the 2005 survey as well. That was done in conjunction with the master plan. The other activity that we found interesting that rated as high, I think it rated as high as eighth, was the desire for an indoor pistol and rifle range. And I think that was Larry salting the survey personally, but he denies that. But, you know, that's not theaters and indoor shooting ranges are not something you typically find with recreation facilities. Theaters much more than shooting ranges, although I do know at least one recreation facility, recreation center, that does have a shooting range as part of it. But those are, I think those are interesting, and again, maybe some in the case of the pistol rifle range, surprising results. But if you look at, and if you could put that other slide back up, Joel, if you look at this slide and you look at the performing arts, which is number one, I think, in that slide, or number two, number one, and if you look at the shooting range, I think, which is maybe number eight, if you take those two out of the equation, the next 12 are all indoor type of recreational activities and facilities that are commonly found in your traditional comprehensive indoor recreation center. And so those are all that are typically easily accommodated by building a recreation center. I think the other information that we found that Joel talked about in quite detail earlier was that teenagers were the group that were targeted as our highest priority. And I think it is interesting that even though we had older adults or adults and older people filling out the survey, that they saw the need that for activities for teenagers. That is not a surprise to us, because we've known for quite some time that because of lack of facilities, teenagers is one area that we have never felt like we've adequately served for recreational services. And there's a limited ability for the school district to also serve these teenagers outside of varsity sports and outside of, you know, club activities and non-sports activities, just speech and that. The analogy we always use is that, you know, there's only going to be about 12 to 15 varsity basketball players, and there's only about 10 to 15 junior varsity basketball players. Well, that we know that there are more than 30 kids in the high school who really enjoy playing basketball. But once they leave our programs and get into the high school, there is, unless they make the junior varsity to the varsity basketball team, there is really no opportunity for any type of recreational organized basketball. And we think that's really too bad. We know that we have a problems, you know, with teenagers in our community doing things that we really prefer they don't do. And we think that it's really important to provide activities, positive activities, to keep them occupied and point them in the right direction. But right now, as I mentioned before, because of the shortage of facilities, we have limited ability to do that. And while our staff knows that one of our critical needs is a gymnasium to provide some of those type of opportunities, we also think that by looking at that survey and looking at some of those secondary desires, such as walking tracks and those type of things, could be easily accommodated with the gymnasium if you incorporated in an indoor recreation center plan. And this would help our ability to provide those services not only to teenagers but to people of all ages. One of the points that I made earlier was that we went back and compared the survey with the 2005 public opinion survey, and we found that the results were fairly consistent, which tells us that the recreation desires and needs of the community in the last 5 years haven't really changed significantly. One of the things that was pointed out in that 2005 survey was that the lowest satisfaction ranking that was evident was the dissatisfaction with indoor recreation facilities in our community. 57% of the respondents rated the availability of indoor recreation facilities and opportunities in Carson City as unsatisfactory. That by far was the lowest single measure of dissatisfaction that was a result of that survey. And the Park and Recreation Master Plan stated that the Parks and Recreation also found that there is a significant need for sports and recreation opportunities for teens, especially in the area of basketball and volleyball. And that was through the survey results that was included as part of the master plan. So what we're going to be bringing to the board, possibly the second meeting in October or maybe even the first meeting in November, depending on the timing of the project, is a repackaged plan for the Indoor Recreation Center. And what this will include will be a phasing in scenario of building this facility at the same time a phasing in scenario of operating the facility. And we'll be bringing that to you, and that'll be for your information and hopefully for some type of decision, again, probably the second meeting in September or the early meeting in November. And I guess with that, again, I'd open up to any questions or comments that you may have.
Roger, I have a quick question. When you bring this back to the board, are you bringing it back as a modified proposal for an indoor rec facility at the location off of Russell Way?
That is correct. We're going to be looking at the same location, the same basic building plan. The idea would be, one of the questions we've always been asked is, how could you phase in this project? Could you build part of it and then kind of defer the future development at a later time? We've always kind of struggled with that. So now we're looking at a new approach to that, that we can maybe build the shell of the building, as Supervisor Walt had mentioned earlier, and then maybe phase in the improvements inside and have it used on a limited basis as a drop-in facility rather than as a programmable facility rather than a drop-in facility, which would reduce our operational costs as well.
You know, obviously, you now know that senior housing is being built immediately adjacent to what would be the indoor rec facility, and I'm just a little bit concerned about the compatibility of an indoor rec center that's going to attract a lot of kids in a senior housing facility. But, I mean, that's something perhaps you could address at a later date.
Yeah, and we will address that. And actually, I think it's a very compatible compatible use.
Because older people can't hear well, is that?
Well, what you find out, and we'll go into this in more detail, but what you find out with senior citizens that they use those facilities at a separate time than when all the youth are there, and they do heavily use things such as indoor walking tracks and fitness equipment.
Okay. Well, of course, one of the critical concerns, obviously, for a number of members of the board were the operational expenses and whether or not we could carry those expenses in the short term and the long term. So I'm assuming that will also be addressed.
That will be addressed as well.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Walt.
Lastly, I just wanted to thank both of you for your due diligence on doing this. Joel, you know we utilize your programming as a family. However, the whole racquetball thing, like I said, my husband and I play, but, you know, I'm going to trust, you know, the research that you have in front of you. And, yes, you know, I mean, in a perfect world, it would be nice. However, we do know that, and we, you know, trust the information that we have in front of us, and we have to go with that. And it is, you know, soon my children will be teenagers too, and I hope that, and you're right, you know, when the high school only has 30 kids that they offer basketball to, you know, that really does put parents into a situation of what are my kids going to do? And it is a need that, of this community that I think needs to be addressed. And, you know, thank you for looking into that and seeing the need that it needs, and hopefully we can address that sooner than later. And so, no, I just, you know, this was a great presentation. The information I felt was very valuable. And, you know, thanks for looking at it and seeing what we can do as a city to address all of the needs that were mentioned here.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. So I guess we'll see you later this year sometime. All right. Thank you. We need a motion, yes,
yep,
to accept the recommend or the survey results.
I move to accept the 2010 Carson City Indoor Recreational Needs Assessment Survey Report.
Second.
Any comments on the question? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? So moved. Thank you. We'll move on to the next item, which is the last item on this agenda, this lengthy agenda. Item 12, Larry Werner is not feeling well today, so Andy is substituting for him. I don't know if Andy's going to be part of this presentation.
Not really. The presentation, Linda's not here as well to go through the presentation.
We have Stacy.
There was one issue that Larry wanted us to address was the ambulance call issue, and Stacy's here to do that. Okay. So that, our thought is just let's go through that, and the other is just information.
Thank you, Stacy.
I'll try and keep this a little bit shorter than Joel and Roger. I'll keep it a lot shorter. Anyway, for some reason, our target response time is 6 minutes on emergency medical calls. And for some reason, in this briefing period, which is July of 2010, we had a response time up over 10 minutes on the report. So we, at this point, are looking into that. We had more calls in the month, so that trend was up, as you saw in the briefing book, not just in the month, but we're sort of trending up a little bit on emergency medical calls. One of the reasons you mentioned the senior housing complex getting built there is that we are a senior community, and we're also a medical hub. And so, you know, pretty close to one-fifth of our calls originate in either licensed medical facilities or licensed adult care facilities, such as the senior complexes that we have. So that's a little bit off topic, but it's one of the reasons that we're trending up. So that answers that question. And in terms of response times, we're looking at our system as opposed to an actuality in our response times. We don't believe that is accurate. So in fact, when we have two systems that we can pull the data from. One is our dispatch system, which feeds data into our fire reporting system. And we actually, in researching this, found an error in that data transfer information. So we don't know if that error accounts for this spike, but we're going to rerun the numbers, and we're working on correcting that error as the data comes from our CAD system automatically into our records management system. So that's the bottom line.
Stacy, is that likely to be done by this time next month for an update report?
It is. Certainly a goal.
Okay. So
whether or not we can, I think we can adjust the figures, and one way or the other, in those anomalies, there's 15 or 20 incidences that caused this data, we believe, to spike. And if nothing else, if we have incidences like that, it's a much more manual process, but we can pull that data out and run the average without that data being in it. Now, the other thing that can spike this, which we typically take out, is we had a call in July, and we've had one in August, so it could happen again, well back into Brunswick Canyon. And it's an emergency call, so it shows up in the report as an emergency call, but our response time to both of these incidences were well in excess of 45 minutes. So one report like that, when your goal is six and you have a 45-minute response time, it can really statistically spike spike that. So we typically look for those anomalies. We pull that out because it is not a representation of our average. It's outside the, you know, the standard deviation.
Okay, so we won't be shocked and dismayed until next month.
Well, I'm hoping you won't be shocked and dismayed even then.
Okay. All right. Any questions for Stacy regarding this issue? Any other questions regarding the scorecard for the
month? I'll just say you waited all this time to give us these few minutes.
Well, it was very interesting. You know, it was interesting to see. So.
Okay. So
it wasn't a complete waste of time.
Okay, not
plus,
a complete waste.
Plus I was,
you notice he qualified that?
Plus I was checking my emails at the same time. So.
He qualified his statement. Okay. Any other questions
concerning
this issue or any other element of the current scorecard? All right. This is a no-action item, so we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, item 13. Are there any board reports or any staff reports? All right. I think this, ladies and gentlemen, is a record. We are about to adjourn at almost 5 after 10. So with that, all right, is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So moved. Thank you.
Okay.